We're holding on Nun Gimel Amud Beis, 12 lines, 11 lines from the bottom, a line begins down. We're in the middle of discussing a machloikas. Now, our Mishnah had said that if you have an aver from if you have a limb from a living person or from a dead person, that yesh alein bosu karoi, it has enough flesh on it that it would regenerate if it was still attached to the person, then we said it's metame v'mago v'maso v'oil, and a nazir has to shave because of it, and then bring his karbonis and lose his naziros, etc., etc. What happens if ein alein bosu karoi? What happens if there's not enough flesh to, there's not enough flesh that it would have regenerated, but on the other hand, it is an aver. So the question is, oihel certainly doesn't, oihel certainly it's not metame, but the question is maga and masa, who touches it or carries it. So Rabbi Yochanan had said that that's not one of the cases where the nazir forfeits the days of the nazirus. He did so far. Rish Lakish says he does. And we discussed because the next Mishnah doesn't mention it, and Rabbi Yochanan says there's a reason why the next Mishnah doesn't mention it, etc. So now, the Gemara said, let's analyze what scenario that they're talking about. Hi, Avram and Ames, hey, she don't. What exactly is the scenario involving this Avram from a dead body? So we're talking about the person died, and then afterwards a limb was detached from the person, and you're talking about the question of whether that limb is Mutam of Mago Hamasa. And again, we're talking about where the limb does not have enough flesh on it that if the person was living and if it was still attached to him, it wouldn't be able to regenerate. Eventually, it would need to be amputated. So that's Einalei and Bosikoro. So what exactly is the scenario that we might ask? Ide ispe etzim kisa'ora. If there is a bone inside that aver the size of a grain of barley, my time is Rav Yechanan. Well, then why does Rav Yechanan say it's not matam of mago hamasa? After all, we learned in our Mishnah that even just a bone by itself, without any flesh on it at all, is enough to be matam of mago masa. It certainly wouldn't be worse because of a little bit of flesh on it. And if there's no etzim kisa'ura, my time is a shlokish. Then why is your shlokish saying that it's matame? If there's no etzim kisa'ura, it doesn't have enough flesh kedela halas arufa, so what kind of chashivus does it have? The answer is Amalach Rish Lakish Olam Delesve Etzim Kesa'ora. So Rish Lakish will tell you that he's talking about even where it does not have an Etzim Kesa'ora in it. Rafi Lohochi Rachmon Rabbi. Nevertheless, Rish Lakish says the Torah is still Marba. The Torah is still including that sort of thing is Matam of Mago Masa. And how he gets that, we're going to bring two Brises, and then after we bring both the Brises, then afterwards, in the middle of Nundalam and Aleph, then we're going to talk about where Rish Lakish gets from these Brises, so it's really primarily from the second Brisa, that such a limb is Matam of Mago Hamasa, even though there's no bone the size of a grain of barley. So again, we could be talking about, as we talked about yesterday, that you have, this is an aver from a very small child, or even from an incompletely formed child, who was stillborn, where there's no etzim kisa'urda in it, but nevertheless, it is a complete aver. So like this, Titania, we learn in one Braisa. Now you have a pasuk like this. It says about in the parasha of Paradroma, at the beginning of Parashas Fokas, you have a pasuk, v'cholash yiga al pnei asadeh, anyone who touches on the surface of the field. So let's quote the whole pasuk first, and then the Gemara is going to go and explain it phrase by phrase. V'cholash yiga al pnei asadeh, anybody who touches anything on the surface of the field, v'chalal cherev, on a corpse, on a dead body that was killed by the sword, or even mace, or in a dead body, or in a human bone, or in a kever, then the pasuk says he'll be tamei for 7 days. So now we're going to darsh in that pasuk phrase by phrase and see that it's talking about many different sources of tumor that come from a mess. So when it starts off, so al pnei hasada, the words al pnei hasada refer to that refers to somebody who overshadows over the mess. In other words, like this, you have a couple of psukim before. It says that you know from that, but if there's a mess inside an oil, inside a building or a tent or what have you, and you're in the same building or in the same tent, then you're going to become tomei. Fine. But where would you know that if you are overshadowing the mess. So let's say you have a mess lying there in the field and you bend over to look at him. Where do we see that you're tummy from that? So from that, we have from this pasuk, al pnei hasodim. And the point is, in other words, because it doesn't say that he touches the mess, so we're talking about that he's overshadowing that he's overshadowing the mess. The Rosh points out that it didn't really need to say the Rosh points out actually there are actually other drushes that the Gemara learns in other places in Shas from these words al pnei hasod. Rabbi Shmuel learns from that it means that if a baby dies inside the mother's womb, then it's not matame until it actually comes out. Rabbi Akiva darshens it to teach us about a golol and doifik, which we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, certain things that are used to cover the kever. But the Rosh says that here we're primarily focusing on the words al pnei. Those drushes of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are focusing on the word hasadim. So Rabbi Shmuel is going to say that it excludes the baby because the baby can't be called et hasodah. Hasodah implies an open area, which the baby is inside the closed up space, the womb. And Rabbi Akiva is going to doubt that it means anything that's on the surface of the field, which is the goel of andoif. But here we're focusing on the words al pnei, where it means, in other words, that he's over the sodah, but not actually touching it. So that's hamal al pnemis. Next, when it says b'chalal, when it says in a corpse, ze'evim enachai v'yeshlo lahalas arucha, that refers to not actually a dead person, because then you have later in the pasuk the next thing it says oy b'meis. So here it refers to a limb from a living person that was cut off, but it could still regenerate. Where again, there's enough flesh on it that if it was attached to the person, it would still be able to regenerate. So then. The word b'cholol is implying that that's matame as well. The mefarish, in fact, the mefarish has a girsa, ze'eva ha-nechlol min ha-chai. The word cholol means a corpse, means a dead body, but it means, in other words, over here, a limb that was made dead from a person. In other words, it was alive, it would have stayed fully alive had it been attached to the person, but now it's not alive anymore, now it's dead. Anyway, so that's what we learned from the word b'chalal. Then continues the b'raisa cherev, when it says a sword, and obviously there's no difference between a person killed by a sword or a person dies or is killed by any causes. So therefore, the word sword over there teaches us the concept in halacha, cherev hareza k'cholo. The sword is like the dead person himself. Meaning, in other words, that a metal keli that touches a mess becomes an avia voisatoma. Like this you have normally, the mess himself, of course, is an avia voisatoma. He can be metame people, and he can be metame kelim that touch him. Like this, what we're saying is the sword or any metal keli that touches a mess has the same din. It's considered like the mess itself, and therefore it's able to be metame something else as an avatoma. So Tosfos brings over here that refers only to metal kalim, and some Rishonim learn that way. The Rosh brings, and then Tosfos brings later on, and Rambam and Beis, that there is a Rishon named Reb Yitzchok Misimponti, who holds that actually that concept of Cherev Hareo Kecholol applies to non-metal kalim as well. That any kalim that touches a mess, would have this din, would be an Aviyah Vesatoma. Further on, on Rundalat on the days, we're going to discuss that point in a little more detail. Anyway, we learned that from the word cherev. And when we talk about it over there, further on, Rundalat on the days, we'll talk about there's a lot of different opinions among Rishonim. To what extent is it like the mess? When you say it's an Aviyah Vosatoma, to what extent? Would it even be, for example, you can't be under the same oil as it? We'll talk about that soon, as again. Anyway, we learned that from the word cherev. Next, when the pasuk continues, oy b'meis, when it says the person touches a dead body, ze'eva ha-nechlom and a-mes, that again refers to not an entire body, but just a limb that was torn off a mess. We're again the same thing, as long as again, it's matame when a person touches it or is overshadowing it or whatever. Maga masa oy, all of that. So now, so far, we don't see in the Braisa yet whether we're talking about Yesh by Lahala Sarucha or Ein by Lahala Sarucha. We're going to get back to that point later on after we bring the rest of this Braisa. And then another Braisa, which refers specifically to touching. And then Rish Lakish is going to derive from that his point that even if there's no Etzim Kesa'ura in there, it's still Matam of Mago Masa. Here, of Apashtus, when we're talking about Oihel as well, then we're talking about where it has a bone in it the size of a grain of barley. So therefore, it's going to, therefore, even Rabbi Yochanan, of course, is going to agree that that's important enough that it'll be matame even by Oihel. Next, the next word in the pasuk is Oi be'etzem adam, or a person touches a human bone. So zeh roi va'atzamai. So from there, we learn that if a person is under an oihel with or touches or whatever a quarter kav of bones, then he's tame. Tosfos points out that that's actually, we learned before, that that is actually a halacha l'moshe v'sinai, the concept of a quarter kav of bones. Here, the fact that we have it in the pasuk is more of an asmachta. It's not the actual source of it. The actual source of that din is a halacha l'moshe v'sinai, but we have a hint for it in the pasuk. Next, the pasuk says oy bakover, or the person touches a grave. So the zek kever sosum, that refers specifically to a sealed grave. Because we learn in a braisa that when you don't have a kever sosum, Tosfos points out that this line that the Gemara is quoting, the omamar tuma bakaska oil bakaska yeredis, is not really necessary for what we're talking about over here, but we'll explain, in other words, in a second, that there's a difference between a kever and not a kever. So tumah v'kasva, the kasva redis, the tumah breaks through and goes upward and downward. Meaning, in other words, like this. What you have is like this. If you have a mess lying on the ground, just out in the open, for example, then the din is only what's directly above the mess or directly below the mess is going to be tumah. The tumah does not spread to the sides. Now, if you have a special case where a mess is buried inside a kever, and Tosfos discusses over here based on other Gemaras, that what happens is, you have inside the kever, you have at least a tefach of space between the mess and the top of the, and the roof of the kever. So you have at least a tefach space between the top of the mess and the roof of the kever. And you also don't have any spaces of a tefach in the side of it, on the sides of the mess. Then what happens is that then what happens is the entire kever is metame, any place a person touches it, and also above it and below it. So even a person touches the part of the kever which is not directly over the mess, but because there is this oihel tefach inside and there's no oihel tefach anywhere else in it on the sides of the mess, therefore the result is the entire thing is treated, in effect, we consider as though that kever itself, as though the entire kever was the mess. So even the areas that don't contain the mess. So if there was no poseach tefach, if there was no space of a tefach above the mess, or if there were spaces of a tefach on the sides, then it would be different. Then the tumah would be contained. If there was no poseach tefach, then it would be just directly above the mess and no place else. And if there were spaces of a tefach on the side, then the tumah would remain inside. Then the tumah would remain inside the kever, and it wouldn't spread over it. So there's a Gemara Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Brachas, for example, where one of the Tanoim, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, who was a Kohen, mentions that they used to sometimes walk or jump over kvarim in order to go and see a melech. Where the idea is, the Gemara explains over there, since most kvarim are constructed in such a way that you do have poseach tefach, you do have a tefach between the mess and the roof of the kever, then therefore midaraisa, they're not metame. At least on a daraisa level, we can assume at least on a daraisa level, the tumah is contained within the kever, because not only you have that, but you also have spaces of a tefach elsewhere in the kever, and therefore that's enough for it not to be considered a kever sosum, and therefore a kohen who walks over it is not becoming tumah, at least on a daraisa level. This is, by the way, very negaya as far as the question of a kohen flying or driving over places where there are kvarim. We're going to talk about in tomorrow's Gemara, Beis Hashem. We're going to talk about the whole issue of oihel zoruch, of moving oihel, which also factors into that. But one of the points is, if we say that most kvarim have, like the Gemara is saying over there in Brachas, if we say achtefach and so forth, then maybe there's less of an issue with kohenim flying over them. On the other hand, they found, practically speaking, that many times it's not so. First of all, over time, especially in Eretz Yisrael, they usually don't bury with coffins at all. They usually just bury in the ground. And eventually the ground subsides over there, and you don't necessarily have a Paseach Tefach inside the grave, in which case Bakaspa or the Bakaspa Yodanis, in which case the Tumah goes straight up. And again, the plane being an oihol zoruk, being a moving oihol, does not necessarily protect the koinim inside from becoming tamei, so it becomes a real issue in halacha. If we knew for a fact, as the Gemara mentions, they were in brachas with the kinds of kvarim that they constructed in those days, where generally there is a paseach tefach, then maybe there'd be less of an issue with it. In chutzar, that's where they generally bury in an oren, then maybe also there's less of an issue because even if the ground subsides, you still have that space inside the oren. Anyway, so that's kever sosum that the Gemara is mentioning, that the Braise is mentioning. That again, if you have the pasuk says oibak kever, so in other words, there can be a case where the kever, the whole kever is considered as though it was one big mess, and therefore the truma is going to extend even above it. Okay, so far all that is one Braise that we learn that we're discussing a pasuk that refers to that we said the beginning of the pasuk, the chol asher yigal al pnei hasodeh, refers not to touching. It refers to oihel because it says al pnei hasodeh, on the surface of the field. So therefore it implies, in other words, we're not just talking about touching, we're talking about overshadowing. Now, continues Rish Lakish. The ilu gabe nigia. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to touching a mess or parts of a mess, then we have Omer Rav Yehuda Tanya. Then we have Rav Yehuda quotes another Braisa that discusses another pasuk, another pasuk in that connection. The pasuk said a couple of psukim later after the pasuk we just quoted. It says that you sprinkle parah adruma water, and it says ba'ala negea ba'etzem over cholol over mace over cover, on a person who touched a bone or a cholol, a corpse, or over mace over cover. So you have four things mentioned. So again, this second braisa is going to be doubting them, and here it says negea, so we're talking about touching. So Tanya, so we learn a braisa v'chol hanegea, or actually the pasuk doesn't actually say the word v'chol, it's v'al hanegea, whatever, a person who touches ba'etzem oy b'cholol, so let's darshin, ba'etzem ze'etzem ketsa'ura, the word etzem over here refers to a grain of bone, the piece of bone the size of a grain of barley, so that's matame, it's not matame ba'oyhol, as we said before, but it is matame if a person touches or carries it, because this pasuk again is talking about touching, oy b'cholol ze'evra nechlo menachai ve'ein bo lahal sarufa. The word becholol, now this braisa says, refers to a limb that was removed, that was cut off from a living person, and there isn't enough flesh on it to regenerate. Oy b'mase ze'evra nechlam in a mess, and then when it continues, a mase doesn't necessarily mean a complete mase, it just means, again, a limb that was removed from a dead person, and again there are Tosfos brings Tosfos and other Rishonim have a dearest of the same thing, but in Balahalasarufa, and there's not enough flesh on it to regenerate. And oiba mace, oiba cover, and then with the fourth thing that it says in the pasuk, oiba cover, a person touched a grave. So now the question is, if we said already that a grave is matame ba'oihol, why did the pasuk need to tell us matame mago v'masa? So Omer Rish Lakish is a kever shalifnei hadibur. So Rish Lakish says this is referring to a kever from before the dibur. Now, what does before the dibur mean? Tosfos explains that it means a kever from before the times of Matan Torah. So now, like this, in other words, we have a machloikas elsewhere in Shas. We learned in Yevamos, it comes up here and there in Shas. There's a machloikas Reb Shimon and the Chachamim, whether the graves of Goyim are metame ba'oil. Everybody agrees that Goyim are metame b'mago b'masa. The question is, what about walking over their graves? Would that, or walking or being in the same room as a body of a Goy, is that metame? Reb Shimon holds no, the Chachamim hold yes. This is also Negea nowadays. You have the Machloikas Abayim Azeh, whether that is the case. And that's Negea, for example, as far as a Koyan being in a hospital where they have a morgue with Goyish bodies, whether he's allowed to be there. So that would depend on this Machloikas of Shimon and the Chacham. Anyway, the point is, Rish Lakish says that, and Tosfos points out, this Braisa necessarily would have to be appointed of Shimon. Even though Reb Shimon is saying that only Jewish bodies are metame ba'oihel, Goyish bodies are not, And he learns that from the fact that the pasuk says over here the word Adam, and then there's the famous thing, Atam Kruyim Adam, only the Jewish people are called Adam. Nevertheless, though, the Shlokish is saying that even Reb Shimon would agree about people who lived before Matan Torah, even though before Matan Torah everybody was Goyim. Nevertheless, that distinction, that we're saying, Atam Kruyim Adam, that came in only at the time of Matan Torah. That's Tosfos' first explanation. Then Tosfos gives a second explanation that it means actually Shalifnei Adibur means even after Matan Torah, before the parasha of Tumas Nes was said. Now, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, we'll learn in a Gittin, Be'ez Hashem, in a few months, that there were eight parashiyos that were told to Moshe on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and one of them is the parasha of Aradim. So therefore, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, you know, we had in today's parasha, we had that was the day the Mishkan was set up. On that day, Hashem taught Moshe eight sections of the Torah, one of them being this one. So that means, now you could have, there were Jews who passed away between Matan Torah and that following Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So the point is, the Rivah brings in Tosfos that this Braisa would mean that even those graves are also metamed. Like this, otherwise you would think that maybe it only means only after this parasha is given are they metame. So Rish Lakish wants you to know that Rish Lakish is telling you, the Braisa wants you to know that actually that even ones from before that, any graves of Jews from after Matan Torah are also metame. And there's several other opinions. There's several other opinions of Rishonim on the subject of what this Lifnei Adibur means. And one thing that Tosfos and the Rosh bring that's relevant over here is there's a Gemara in Bava Basra that tells a story where the Banna was going and marking graves so that Kohenim don't walk over them. And the Gemara tells a story over there how he went to the Ma'aris Machpelah and was marking it so Kohenim will know where they can walk and where they can't walk. For Pashkas, we have to understand. I mean, nowadays you have a building built over it, but I guess we have to understand that the Banna lived before that building was built. Anyway, the question is, if you're going to tell me, says Tosfos, that according to Reb Shimon, again, these graves of Goyim are not Matame Ba'oihel, then why does he need to mark anything anyway? This is before Matan, all the people who are buried in Moses Machpelah passed away before Matan Torah. And so the Rivah explains, again, according to his Shita, that it means that we mean only Kvarim from after Matan Torah, Matame, according to Reb Shimon, not ones from before it. However, since Reb Shimon is learning it from the word Adam, then therefore, Adam Arishan and the others are an exception. Adam Arishan, of course, himself is called Adam. Avraham is also called, there's a pasuk that mentions Adam Hagadol Ba'anokim, the great man among the giants, and the Medrash says that refers to Avraham Avinu. So they can be called Adam, they would be an exception to the rule. So Rish Lakish says that Kevrish Alifnei Adibur. So again, one possibility then is that Rabbanah is holding like Reb Shimon and saying that even according to Reb Shimon, there would be an exception. Another possibility, the Rosh says that Rabbanah would hold like the Chachamim, that it doesn't make a difference before or after the Dibur, according to them. You don't need this Drosha from the word Oibakov. Okay. So now that we have these two brises, and really it's mainly the second brisa that Rish Lakish is going to bring us proof from, the first brisa really we're only mentioning in order to complete the whole subject. B'chlal, what you have is Seder Taharis, which is where these dinim of Tumas Nes are dealt with, does not have Gemara Bavli, with the exception, or Yerushalmi for that matter, with the exception of Masechta Nidah. So therefore, when the Gemara comes in other Masechtas to dealing with matters of Tumah V'Tahara, it wants to analyze the subject as fully as possible because there's not going to be another place to do it necessarily. So therefore, that is why here in Masechta Nazir, we're going into this analysis. But really, as far as Rish Lakish's proof, all he needs really is the second Braisa that mentioned the cases of Tachshu. So now, says Rish Lakish, Hai Abram Ames Heshigam. So you're telling me in the second Braisa, you're saying that if there's an Avram and Ames, then Avram Nechlam and Ames, then you're saying that that's Matamib Magul Masa. So, says Rish Lakish, Hechi Dami, what's the scenario? Ide iste etzim kisaura, if there's a bone in it the size of a grain of barley, hainu hanageb etzim. Well, then the pasuk already mentions a person touches an etzim, and the same Braisa says that means etzim kisaura. So therefore, obviously, such an Avram would be Matamib. Obviously, we have to be talking about, there's no bone the size of a grain of barley in it, because again, we're talking about it's an Eber that came from a very tiny baby or something. And nevertheless, the Torah is still including it, because it is a complete Eber. So even though it's Eber Menames, and even though it doesn't have, and even though it doesn't have Kedei Lahalos Arucha, because the Braisa didn't say anything about that, or even if it does, it explicitly said in by Lahalos. And nevertheless, the Braisa is saying that you're Tomei if you touch it or carry it. Well, there you go, the Shlokish says. So all our Mishnah is telling us is that, back on Mem Testament days, is that if a Nazir is under an Oihel with such an Aver, then he won't be Tomei and he won't have to shave, etc. But if he touches it or carries it, sure he will. Not like Rishlok, not like Rabbi Yechon. The answer is, Amalach Rabbi Yechonon, well, Rabbi Yechonon will tell you, as a matter of fact, after all, the Braisa didn't specify one way or the other whether there is lahalos by arucha or not, or whether there, or rather, whether there's etzim kisa'ora or not. We could be talking about that there is etzim kisa'ora. Fine, you know what? You're right. The pasuk doesn't need to tell us that if a person touches it, he's tamei, because obviously we know that from the fact that if he touches a bone, so all the more so if he touches an aver that contains a bone. The chiddush would be that the pasuk is, you have a lot of times, you would say the pasuk is not needed to tell us that such an aver is that is matame if you touch it. It's telling us that it's matame if you carry it, which otherwise we wouldn't have known. After all, the pasuk says negeah. And in fact, the Rosh wonders, according to Rosh Lakish, how would we know that? The Rosh Lakish agrees that if you carry without touching a bone the size of a grain of barley, you're going to be tamei. Where exactly does he know that from? Rabbi Yochanan is saying you're learning it from the drasha and this braisa. But if Rosh Lakish is using that drasha for a different purpose, then where does he know it from? Anyway, the point is though that Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that that yes, in fact, you're right. We're talking about an Aver that does contain an Etzim Tisa'ura. The Chiddush of the Pasuk and the Chiddush of the Braisa, quoting the Pasuk, is that it's the Tamei B'Masa, which otherwise you wouldn't have known. There's an interesting point that Rav Elvel Brisker makes, the Brisker Rav. He says that, now, Bechlau, the Rambam explains in Hilchos Tumas Mes, how Bechlau do we know that a mess is Matame B'masa? We really don't have it anywhere in these psukim of Parashas Parah. It doesn't say, it never says anything about masa over there. It says that if you touch it, it says that if you're an oil. Where do we see anything about carrying? So the Rambam points out, you have a Kavachim, Madach and Vela, which is not Matame B'oihel, nevertheless is Matame B'masa, and that, the Pasuk says, it says explicitly, so how much more so a mess which is matama ba'oyla? Well then, the Brisker Rav points out, that's only going to work for tumas that are ba'oyla. An etzim kisa'ora, the whole point is, not matama ba'oyla, therefore that kavachomu is not going to work for that, and therefore we need a limud over here. That's what the Rosh is wondering, so how would Rish Lakish learn that if he himself is saying that that you're learning the braisa differently? But anyway, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say the Braisa doesn't contradict me, because in fact the Braisa is telling us the concept of Tumas Masa as far as such an Aver, which you wouldn't know otherwise, given that but it is talking about where it has an Etzim Kisaira, as just a bone by itself, it would be Matamba B'Masa, but you wouldn't know that without the Pasuk saying the word Oy B'Cholo, Oy B'Mes rather. So Rabbi Yochanan still says, I'm sticking to what I say, that if it doesn't have lahalos arucha, if it doesn't have enough flesh to regenerate, and it doesn't have etzim kasarira, the fact that it's an aver is neither here nor there, it's not matame, even mamaga, or even mamasa. Okay. The Gemara continues. Now, we said in the Mishnah that all these tumas that we mentioned in the Mishnah about the Nazir, we said umazir b'shlishi uvashmi, we said he gets sprinkled with parah drum of water on the third and seventh day, just like any regular tumah mess. The soysa v'chola, and we said he forfeits all the days of his nazirus, and he has to start all over again. Okay, we had earlier in the Masechta, we had the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer, where we had Rabbi Eliezer that says sometimes he only loses 30 days, but anyway, the point is, the Gemara is going to focus on the last line of the Mishnah, which is, Ene Maschil Limnos, he does not begin recounting his Nezirus, Ela Ad Shigitar, until he becomes Tahar, or maybe as Korbanos, and bring his Korbanos. So now the Gemara is going to analyze that line of the Mishnah. So Iboil. So the question was, Hod Katani Adji Yitar, when the Mishnah says that he doesn't start until he becomes Tahar, what do we mean, Adji Yitar? Bashvi Ikoi, do we mean we're talking about on the seventh day? The seventh day is when he finishes the process of his tumah. He gets sprinkled the second time, he toivels. Then on that day also is so are we saying that so Bashvi Ikoi, and the word Adjiyita means Ad Ovid, head of Shemesh. So he would have to wait until he has head of Shemesh. Actually, Tosfos and the Rosh do not have the words Ad Ovid, head of Shemesh. The Gemara is maybe entertaining the possibility he may not even need head of Shemesh. Even during the daytime on the seventh, he could already count that day as the first day of his new Nezirus, even before he brought his Korbanos, and even before he had head of Shemesh. The Girsa that we have in front of us would be that he'd have to have a head of Shemesh, and then he could begin even before he brings his Korbanos. And then you would say, Umani Rabbi Yezri, in which case, if you say that, then it would mean that our Mishnah would be like Rabbi Yezri. Now, we had earlier in the Masechta, a three or four way machoikas about when the Nazir becomes Tomei, and then he's Tahar, and wants to restart his Nazirus, at what point can he restart? We had on Yud Ches on the base. So we had Rabbi Eliezer saying that he can start right away. The Chachamim say he has to wait until he brings at least his Chatos. We had Rebbe saying he doesn't have to wait till he brings his Korbanos, but he does have to wait until the actual eighth day, until he's able to bring his Korbanos, because he can't bring them at night. So would our Mishnah be implying that even before head of Shemesh, or according to the Mephorish's Girsa, and the Girsa that we have in front of us is after head of Shemesh, but he hasn't brought his Korbanos yet, in that case it would be, but even in other words by night, and then therefore our Mishnah would be like Rabbi Eliezer. So the Mishnah, in other words, when our Mishnah on Memchesim Abayz said, Ad Shiyitar, when it says he can't start until he becomes Tahar, means he becomes Tahar, then he can already start his Nezirus over, and then maybe his Korbanos, and then he has to bring his Korbanos on the eighth day. But that day would already be the second day of his new Nezirus. So is it that way? Or maybe the Mishnah is referring to the eighth day. Or my Adshiyitar Adshiyavi Korbanos. So maybe the word Adshiyitar means until he actually brings his Korbanos. So maybe the Mishnah says until he becomes Tahar, and the full process of him becoming Tahar includes bringing his Korbanos. Umani Rabbanim. And in that case, our Mishnah would be like the Chachamim, that he has to actually wait until he brings his Korbanos, and until then he can't restart. So the Gemara says, The Rosh seems to have a slightly different Girsa, where he says that it would be Rebbe, not Rabbanon, but it would be Rebbe, who says that he doesn't have to wait till he actually brings the Korbanos, just until the eighth day comes, and he could bring the Korbanos, because he could conceivably bring them first thing in the morning. Okay, so the Gemara says Toshma. Well, let's prove from the fact that the next Mishnah continues, Mitkotani Sefer, because the Sefer, which is the following Mishnah that we're now going to have here, at the bottom of the Amud, says that in the cases, you have the various cases it's going to list where Nazir became Tomei with things that don't cause him to forfeit his Nazirus up until now. So we say he does have to spend his Nazirus for the 7 days that it takes for him to become Tahar. But the expression is, Umas to the Moina Miyad, the expression is that he begins recounting, that he right away begins recounting, implying right away on the seventh day. Therefore, in the Reisha, it has to be that the word Adshiyitar means not only he becomes Tahar, but he actually brings his Korbanos, and Umani Rabbanon he, and therefore the Mishnah would be like a Chachamim, Da'ami Nezirus Tara, Adshini Leichaila. They say that the new Nezirus Tara cannot begin until the eighth day, unlike Rabbi Eliezer, who said that could conceivably begin on the seventh day. So that would be the difference. In other words, when the Nazir became Tomei with one of the 12 Tumas mentioned in the Mishnah on Memtesim Abayz, then he would have to wait until the eighth day. So what happens is he gets sprinkled with Parah Adumah water on the third day. He gets sprinkled again on the seventh day. That same day, the seventh day, he goes to the Mikveh. That night, he has head of Shemesh. The next day, the eighth day, he brings his Korbanos Tumah, the two birds and the sheep. And then once he's done that, then he can start his Nezirus Tara. Then that day becomes the first day of his new Nezirus. Whereas according to Rabbi Eliezer, again, we were saying that he could have already started his Nezirus the day before. And then on the other hand, the Mishnah is going to say now, the following Mishnah is going to say that when he's tummy with one of the tumas that a Nazir does not have to shave for, then in fact, even the Chachamim will agree that he can restart his Nezirus on the seventh day because there's no Kavanah for him to wear. So now the Mishnah continues. Abel, however, let's have a bunch of cases where even though the person becomes Tomei, he does not have to shave and bring his Karbonis and start all over. So Abel has Schochis. However, Schochis, which is branches of trees that overshadow the ground. So now you have a scenario that you have, there's these branches that hang over the ground. There's known to be Tuma under one of those branches, but you don't know which one. So now, if the Nazir walks under one of the branches, so then you have a suffix, whether he's tummy, but because it's only a suffix, then therefore, then he wouldn't shave and so forth. We're going to learn actually in the next perek that there's a difference between Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim when it comes to suffix tumah. There's a concept that suffix tumah, Rishus HaYochid, is considered tummy in the Daraisa, only Rishus HaRabim would it be tahor. So what we're talking about over here, Tosfos explains that we're talking about over here. This is a case where it would be in Mishus Rabin, and it would actually be Tohar Midaraisa, but Midrabanan, we would say that he's Tamim, but the Rabbanan can't tell him to shave and bring his Korbanus. They can't tell him to shave because if he's a man, he's not allowed to shave his payas, which would be part of the process of shaving for a Nazir. And in any case, man or woman, he can't bring Korbanus because the Chum can't tell you to bring Chulin into the Azara. Tosfos also mentions on Amud Beis that we're talking about over here that none of the branches are a tefach wide. If any of the branches were a tefach wide, then you would have a different issue because then they can be considered an oyal minatora. There are different Rishonim who discuss the ins and outs of that. Not all of the Rishonim agree to that. And the point about it not being a tefach wide, So in fact, there are some of the Rishonim who learn that maybe even we're talking about the branches are a tefach wide, but again, the point is there's a suffix which one it was under. Tosfos themselves in some other places mentions a possibility also we could be talking about, for example, where the branches are, if you look horizontally from underneath, they're one next to the other, but if you were to look at them from the side, you would see they're at different heights. So therefore, not necessarily on a Daraisa level, do they combine together to make as if they were one roof. There are Rishonim who talk about the idea that the question could also be how close they are together. Conceivably, for example, if you smeared a layer of plaster over them, would it stand? Are the branches close enough together that plaster would stay in place, or would it just fall down because the branches are too far apart? That's another consideration when then they would be Metame de Rabbanan. And there's different other points that Amban makes a point that branches, after all, they all begin from the same tree and then they spread out. So therefore, there's a reason maybe to consider them more tame than otherwise. In any case, we're saying over here, it's not a strong enough tumor for a nozzle to shave for. Next, that price, and then you have stones that stick out of a wall. Similar idea. You have stones that stick out of a wall. There's one of them that's known to have tumor underneath it, but again, you don't know which one. So again, if a Nazir walks underneath them, then he may be Tomei, at least the Rabbanan, but he's not going to be shaving and bringing his Korbanus. Tosfos actually brings from a Gemara in Masech Nida that seems to imply that if he were to walk under all the stones, then he would be Tomei, because after all, inevitably, then it means he went under the Tumah. In any case, let's say he went only on the summit. Next, Ubesa Pras. The next one is a Besa Pras, which is discussed in a number of places in Chas. This is an area of a field where there's a grave that was plowed up. So a person plowed up a field that had a grave in it. Now, Midaraisa, we're not really concerned. Midaraisa, we don't assume the plow blade digs that deeply into the earth to even disturb the grave, and even if it does, it's not very likely to. It's scattered bones all over the place. But Midrabanan, we're concerned about that, and we say for 100 amma in each direction, we have to be concerned that there may be fragments of bone in the field. And again, those fragments of bone, as we learned before, we don't assume there's going to be pieces that are large enough to be metama ba'oil, but they may be metama mago umasa, so therefore a person walks through that field and he may touch them with his feet. As he walks, then he may be tummy. But again, from nausea, walks through such a place, we're not going to make him shave and bring his korbanos, because again, it's only drama. Next, the Eretz Ta'amim, also the lands of the Goyim, meaning all the lands outside Eretz Yisrael. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to begin talking about that on Omer Beis, what the nature of that Tumah is. V'ha'golol v'ha'doifik, also a golol doifik of a kever. Now Rashi, in a number of places in Shas, explains that the golol is the covering, is the lid of the coffin, and the doifik would be the side pieces of the coffin. Tosfos here and a number of other places in Shas argues with that. We learned before, al pnei asada is a girl of a doifik, implying that they have to be something exposed, whereas these things, the cover and the lid and the sides of the coffin are buried in the ground. So rather, Tosfos here and in some other places explains that girl means the matseva, means the stone, the gravestone over the grave. In particular, it's the kind of gravestone that you often find in Eretz Yisrael and in some places in Chutz La'aretz, where it runs the full length of the kever, the typical gravestones that we're familiar with. In Chutzlar, it's only a headstone. Here we're talking about one that runs the full length of the kever. And the doifik then would be the side pieces that hold it up, the footstones or whatever you call them.
It's a
kisui na'orim. That's what Rashi explains. Kisui na'orim means the lid of the orim. So according to Rashi, the girdle and doifik would be buried in the ground.
Were they buried in an orim or were they just in the ground?
Yeah, well, they would be buried in an orim in the ground. So, yeah. So Rashi learns that the girdle and doifik are parts of the orin. Tosfos learns that they are parts of the matseva. There is actually the word girdle literally means rolling, and there are people who explain. You find we're going to have towards the end of Amasafta, we're going to talk about the system that they used to bury in those days. They used to often bury people in niches in walls, and then they would have sort of a stone that they would roll in place to cover the opening of it. So that would be the word girdle means rolling. So that would be that stone that's rolled in place over there, and then the doifik would be like pieces of stones that you put underneath it to chuck it so that it doesn't roll over. Like you put chucks under a wheel when you're changing a tire or something, so it doesn't roll away. So that would be another possibility of girdle and doifik. Anyway, again, a nozir touches a girdle of doifik, he will become tamei, but not to the extent where he's going to have to shave and bring his korbanos. Because even though we said before, those are included in tumas nes, they're not tumas directly from the nes. It's more indirect, and therefore, again, since the pasuk says v'chiyomus meis olav, if a mess dies in his presence, so that implies there's only tumas directly from the mess, not these indirect kind of tumas. Next, urvias dam. The next thing is urvias of blood. So we learned in the last mishnah and in the gemara in some detail that urvias of blood is enough to be metame a person. Even ba'oil, but it's not enough to make a nazir shave. Again, we said there's halacha l'moshe v'sinai that when it comes to a nazir, certain shiurim has to be larger in order for him to have to shave. In fact, Tosfos says you don't really need to say revius. Really, it's anything less than a half a lug. We said in the previous mishnah, a half a lug. So anything less than that is not going to make him shave. But we're using the word revius dam because that's the standard terminology that we use as far as tumas nes, where revius of blood is enough to make a person tummy. Next, v'oihel, and we learned before in the Gemara, by the way, that the reason why the Mishnah is mentioning revius dam, even though before it mentioned the half a lug of blood, and we would infer from that, obviously, that anything less than a half a lug, a nozer doesn't shave, is because we're going to have a Mishnah later on in the Perek, at the end of the Perek, from Bov on the Beis, where Rabbi Akiva is going to try to learn that revius dam is matameh nozer, and makes him shave, and Rabbi Eliezer is going to tell him no, so therefore our Mishnah is telling us revius dam to tell us not like Rabbi Akiva. Next, v'oihel. The roiva atzamos. The next thing is an oihel and a quarter kav of bones. So now there are two ways of understanding that phrase. The Bartanura on the Mishnah explains, and Tosfos Yomtiv explains, following him explains, that it means that it's one thing, an oihel over a roiva atzamos. So in other words, if the nazir is in a tent or a building or whatever, together with a roiva atzamos, again, even though he's going to be tamei, he's not going to be shaving and bringing his karbonis, because again, it's not a strong, and it's not the kind of tumah. It's one of those things, halacha l'moshe v'sinai, that a nazir does not shave over there. Then you have the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos understands it a little differently. He says we're talking about two things, an oihel of Atzamos, as well as if he touches a roi v'atzamos. Anyway, also, the kelim anogim b'mes, also if the nozir touches kelim that previously touched the dead body, so we said before, cherev hareu kachol, also the kelim themselves, and again, we talked about before, do we mean only metal kelim, or do we mean appointed of Yitzchak Misimpont, we mean all kelim. Anyway, so those touch a mess. So again, a person touches them, he becomes tamei. So, but again, since it says v'chiyomus meis olav, so it has to be a direct tumah from a mess, and not the kelim anogim a mess, which is not a direct tumah from the mess. Also, uvi meis sofrei uvi mei gomrei. Now let's move away from tumas mess and talk about the tumah of a mitzorda. Now we know mitzorda goes through many stages of his tumah. You have, and here the Gemara is actually going, the Mishnah is actually mentioning them out of order. But the way it works with a Mitzurda is, we know that a Mitzurda first goes to the Kohen. Sometimes the Kohen declares him a Mitzurda Mukhlat right away and tells him you have to leave the Machne and then do all the things that it says in the Pasuk. Sometimes you have, as we know, there can be 1 or 2 weeks where the Kohen keeps him in quarantine to see what the situation is, to see does it develop 2 hairs or a Michya, or does it grow larger, etc. Anyway. So once the tzaras goes away, then you have the procedure at the beginning of Parshas Mitzurda involving the water and the 2 birds and the eight eres and ezev and so forth. After that, the Mitzurda starts, he shaves and starts counting 7 days before he then shaves again and brings his karbanos. So you may suffer are the days that he's counting those 7 days. Yemei Gomrei would be the days when he's a confirmed Mitzurda and has to be outside the city. So those days, as the Mishnah is going to go on to explain, they don't count towards his Nazirus. They don't make him lose his Nazirus, but they don't count towards the days of his Nazirus. So in other words, he had become a Nazir, let's say, for 30 days. A regular Stam Nazirus Shloshim Yom. 20 days into his Nazirus, he became a Mitzurda. Now let's say, so forget about the quarantine days or whatever. Let's say he became a Mitzurda Mukhlat right away. So he'll be outside the Machna, let's say he's like Miriam. He's outside the Machna for a week. Then after that they do the thing with the 2 birds and so. Then after that he counts another 7 days. All of those days do not count to him. During those days, his Nazirus is suspended. After the 7 days of counting, when he's ready to bring his Korbanos, then he can start, then he can also continue his Nazirus and do the last 10 days of his Nazirus. So during that time, he can't shave, he still can't drink wine, he still can't do any of the things of a Nazir, but they don't count towards his days of Nazirus. So for all these things, and Tosfos points out, by the way, why it needs to mention you may suffer and you may gomer. You could think that otherwise, you would think, if it only said you may suffer, but you may gomer when he's actually outside the city and has a very severe degree of tumah, you would think maybe those do make him lose his days of Nazirus till now. And if it only mentioned gomer, fakir, you would say maybe the days of suffer do count. Anyway, so the Mishnah continues, Al Elu Eina Nozim Galeach. So for all of these that we mentioned in the Mishnah, the Nazir does not shave his hair. Now, in the case of the Mitzurah, he's shaving anyway, because, of course, the Mitzurah has to shave, but we mean, in other words, he's not shaving as a Nazir Tomei and doing all that procedure. However, when it was with any of the Tumas mess that we were talking about, he does need to be sprinkled with Parah Duma water on the 3rd and 7th day. Obviously, again, that doesn't apply to the Mitzurah. Tosfos also points out that it wouldn't be talking about the Kalim Anogim B'mess. It wouldn't be talking about the Kalim that touched the mess, because Tosfos explained that here we're talking about wooden Kalim. So according to Yitzchak Misimpont, maybe, because according to him, Cher Vareu Kecholol counts for wooden Kalim as well, but according to the other Rishonim, who hold that it applies only to metal Kalim, then according to them, he obviously is not being sprinkled with Parad the water. So what we mean is the rest of the things we mentioned in the Mishnah, the Schochos, Trois, the Revius Dam, and so on and so forth. So he'd be sprinkled with
Parad. How can he shave being a Mitzurah while being a Nazir at the same time? Why he doesn't have to wait until he's not a Nazir anymore?
So the basic idea is, and we're going to talk about it in great detail later on in the Masechta, in the last Perek in particular, is because basically the Rambam explains it, during the time that he is a Metzora, since his Nazirus is suspended, then therefore the Isser of a Nazir shaving his hair is also temporarily suspended, therefore he's able to shave for his Nazirus, and then go back to continuing his, and to shave for his Taras, rather, and then go back to shaving for his Nazirus, so go back to finish counting his Nazirus and shave for it. I should say, actually, it's in the next parak, actually. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that whole concept. We're going to talk about that particularly, beginning on New Testament days. We're going to have cases involving that.
It's suspended to the point where
to the
he
point
can shave?
I mean, yes. Okay, continuing the Mishnah. The Einoim Soser Sakoidmim, however, in all these cases, the Mishnah, he does not forfeit the days that he counted until now for his Nazirus. Now, they don't count towards his Nazirus, but he doesn't forfeit the days. Actually, Tosfos brings that Rashi wondered, or on the side over here, it says over here, Girsa, that it's supposed to be that the Rash, which is Rabbeinu Shimshon, wonders why indeed, if he doesn't touch Kalim, or if he touches Kalim on Nogim Mames, then why indeed, he's only Tomei, Tumas Erev, he's only Tomei for one day, why shouldn't that day count towards the Nazirus? Anyway, but that's what it is. We're saying that they don't count towards the Nazirus, but he doesn't forfeit the days until now. So he continues counting his Nazirus as soon as he becomes Toher from Tumas Mess. And again, as we looked before, in other words, he doesn't have to wait till he brings his Korbanus, because there's no Korbanus for him to bring. In the case of a Metzora, that's a special case, and we're going to discuss that in the Gemara later. We talked about that earlier in the Masechta as well, that a Metzora is a special case because he has Korbanus to bring. Anyway, the korban ain't loy. In most of these cases, there's no korban, or actually in all these cases, there's no korban of a nazir tamei, because even in the case of a tzora, he has korbanus, but the korbanus, of course, are not korbanus for nazirus, they're korbanus for tzoras. Continues the Mishnah, the MS Amru, in truth they said, and we have a general rule that the Gemara says that whenever it introduces a halacha with the words the MS Amru, means halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that Yemei Hazov V'Hazov, that the days of a Zov or a Zava, so suppose that a Nazir, suppose a person became a Nazir and then in the middle became a Zov, or a woman became a Zava, the Yemei Hasgele Shal Metzora, and also the days of quarantine of a Metzora, Harelo Olamai, those actually count towards his Nazirus. So unlike, in other words, to continue our scenario before with the Nazir. So let's say, for example, he took on Nazirus for 30 days, and let's say 5 days after he became a Nazir, he developed Tzaras. So now we're not certain whether it's Tzaras, so the Kohen quarantines him for a week, and then he checks him on the seventh day. So let's say at that point he becomes a Metzora Muchlat, so he becomes a confirmed Metzora. So now what happens is those first 7 days that he was quarantined do count towards his Nazirus. So far he's got 12 days of Nazirus, he's got 18 days to go. Now what happens is, because he became a confirmed Metzora, now his Nazirus is suspended. So it's suspended for however long the Tzaras stays on him. Again, let's say it was like Miriam 1 week, or however long it could be, doesn't really matter. It's also suspended for the 7 days that he counts after the beginning of his Tara and his first shaving. Then eventually he brings his Korbanus for the Tzaras, and then he resumes and does the remaining 18 days of his Nazirus, let's say. But again, the point is that the days when he was quarantined, which was 7 days, or even could be 2 weeks, could be 13 days, those actually count towards the Nazirus, and he doesn't have to, unlike the other ones which don't count, which don't make him lose the days until now, but they don't count either, these days actually count. And the same with him, the days of a Zava or a Zava, so as a person becomes a Zav, he has to count 7 clean days. A woman becomes a Zava, a Zava Gdola, she has to count also 7 clean days. Those days actually count towards the Nazirus. So now their time of the end of their Nazirus is getting closer and closer. They haven't lost those days. Tosfos actually explains that when you say Yemei Hesgeroi would actually mean that only when the Yimei Hesgeroi was followed by eventually that he became Tahir. Because after all, you could have, in the quarantining process, you could have, he's locked up for 7 days or for 13 days, and then the Kohen checks him, and sure enough, it finds that there's no simonim to confirm that it's saras. It didn't spread, it didn't develop white hair, it dulled in color or whatever, so then Tosfos learns that would be when it counts towards Nizibs. But on the other hand, Tosfos is implying that if, in fact, he ends up after the quarantine, he becomes a Matzora Mukhlat, then Tosfos learns that not those days would not count towards his Nizirus. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. The Elohim has Schochos. Now, the first two things we said in the Mishnah are Schochos and Kroos. So what's the definition of Schochos? Elon HaMesach HaLa'oret, a tree that overhangs the ground, and again, you have a mess buried under one of the branches, or a kazais from a mess under one of the branches, and you don't know which one, and therefore, so again, you have this matter of Suffolk, and even though it's Suffolk Tumah B'Rishus HaRabim, nevertheless, Midrabanan was still Tumah, but in the case of the Nazir, we will say Suffolk is Tumah, but he's not going to bring his coat, he's not going to shave and bring his karbanos. And again, we have the whole discussion before whether we're talking about that the branches are a tefach wide, aren't a tefach wide, are they next, how close are they to each other horizontally, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Oprois, and what's the definition of oprois? Is hayotzis min hagedr, is stones that stick out of a wall. Same idea. In other words, you have stones that stick out of a wall and there's known to be a mess under one of them, but you don't know which one. The next thing in the Mishnah we said was the Eretz Ha'am. We said the lands of the nation, the lands outside Eretz Yisrael. So those are Matam. So now let's figure out why. Iboyimu. So the question is, Eretz Ha'amim Mishum Avira Gozu Aleha, what is the reason why the Chachamim made the Gzera that if a person goes into Eretz Ha'amim, they become Tamim? Is it even just the airspace of Eretz Amim is Tomei? Now, Lamaskana, it is actually like that. The Gemara is going to end up concluding, we are going to end up concluding that it is in fact Mishum Avira. The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, you know, of the Pnimiyus Inyanim, the idea is that the lands outside Eretz Yisrael, even their air is Tomei or Moli Klippus. But here, you know, we're dealing with on the practical level of Halacha, is that in fact the reason? And the idea would be, now the point would be, in other words, even then, if a person goes into Eretz Amim in a closed box or in a coach or something, or you know, nowadays in a car or an airplane or whatever, then they would still be Tamim. Or Tosfos says, let's say, for example, they walked over Eretz Amim in a bridge or something. So maybe, in other words, the idea would be the Chachamim wanted to discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laaretz, and therefore they would say that anybody who goes to Eretz Ha'amim is Tameh. Again, you know, for us nowadays, we wouldn't realize that there's much to it. Okay, so I become Tameh, big deal, but Tameh nowadays anyway. In those times where it meant that now you'd have to go find a person to sprinkle Parah Adumah water on you, and until then, if you're a Kohen, you can't eat Truma and Kodshim, or if you're a Kohen, you can't eat Truma, and if you're a Yisrael, you can't eat Kodshim or Maisa Sheni or what have you, then it would be a hardship, so therefore that would discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael. So is that the idea?
Even though we're all tummy, are you saying that the tumor of Eretz Amim is the same or as the present tumor of Eretz Yisrael? I mean, that sounds very, very surprising.
Well, no. So there is, we're all going to talk about at the very end of the Masechta, we're going to talk about the Chachamim used every possible excuse to declare that Eretz Yisrael is not tummy. Even though the reasons that we're going to mention now about Eretz Amin conceivably could apply in Eretz Yisrael as well, nevertheless, the Chachamim did not want to declare Eretz Yisrael Tomei where not necessary. If we know that there's an area that has Tumah in it, then it's different. But yeah, so the answer is the Tumah of Eretz Amin exists nowadays also. Practically speaking, it's not necessarily Negea much because everybody nowadays is Tomei mess anyhow. Even a Koyan who lives in Eretz Yisrael, the Pashtus at some point in his life, has been in an area where there are kvarim, he's been in a hospital, he's been in a morgue, or whatever, and therefore, practically speaking, there's not necessarily the issue of going into Eretz Amim. But the concept, the trauma of Eretz Amim still exists, yeah. Anyway.
No, I understand it exists, but you're saying the degree of tumor is the same. At this point.
Well, no, it's not that the degree of tumor is the same. What we're saying is, practically speaking, even everybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael is Bechezkos Tomei. But there's a difference that the Eretz Yisrael itself, the land of Eretz Yisrael itself, has a chazaka being Torah, unless you know otherwise, whereas the lands of Eretz Amim have because of this Zera Drabanan, are considered Torah. Yeah.
So when you add the tumah of the land and the tumah of the people, you still get less tumah than outside Eretz Yisrael, apparently.
Okay. Fine. So that's how it is, yeah. Okay. But again, as far as having practical implications, for halacha, it doesn't necessarily nowadays,
right,
because we're all b'chesed of Sinai Mason.
Okay.
Right. Or maybe the gzera of Eretz Amin is because of the clods of dirt. Which would mean, in other words, so only if a person is touching it or carrying it or being in an oihel with it or being an oihel himself over it, then he would be metame. But for example, if he went in there in a sheet of table or migdal, if he went in there inside a box or something, or like Tosfos says, over a bridge or something, he wouldn't necessarily become tame. Now, what would be the reason Mishum Gusha? So Tosfos points out a couple of possibilities. First of all, you have, for example, the people who died in the mob. Their remains are all, can be all over the place in Chutzlaretz. Yeah, the Gemara mentions in Zvachim an opinion that that the reins of the Mabul didn't land in Eretz Yisrael, and even according to the opinion that they did, again, as it says at the end of the Masechta, the Chachamim tried to use every excuse to not declare Eretz Yisrael Tamei. But Chutzlaretz, you don't have that, so that would be one point. You have Mesei Mabul, you have the dead of the Mabul over there, that are embedded in the earth all over the place. There's also the point that there are Jews who were killed in Chutzlaretz, so therefore their bodies might be anywhere. And there's also other Rishonim point out that there are also the Goyim themselves bury indiscriminately. They don't always necessarily bury in actual cemeteries or whatever, and therefore you might have bodies of Goyim buried there. So again, you may have the same problem. Again, if you go like the Chachamim against Reb Shimon, that even Kivrei Goyim on the Tamei Ba'oihel, like we talk about on Amud Aleph, then you would have a problem. According to Reb Shimon, maybe you wouldn't have a problem because, according to him, Goyish bodies are not Matami bodies. Anyway, but even so, could we say that the problem with the land of Chutzlaretz is the actual clods of dirt which may contain human remains in them? And in fact, Tosfos discusses in some detail over here, would a person in fact be Tomei if he's in an Oihel over it? There's a Mishnah in Oholos that lists Eretz Amim and Beis HaPras as things that are not Matamim B'Oihel. So Tosfos talks about that there, you're talking about if you took a clod of dirt from Eretz Amim and brought it to Eretz Yisrael, then that would be different. Then it's not Matamim B'Oihel. Here we're talking about if you walk into Eretz Amim, or if you're walking into Eretz Amim or something, so then maybe you'd become Tomei from Tumas Oihel. Then Tosfos says also maybe there's a difference. There were different Zeres that the Chachamim made, this thing about Eretz Amim, the Gemara mentioned in Shabbos had different stages in it. Anyway. So that's the question. Is it because of the Avir or because of the Gush? So the Gemara says, Toshma, well, let's prove from our Mishnah. We said, Umazah b'shlishi or b'shvi. We said in all those cases, and the Gemara is assuming at this point, that the Mazah b'shlishi or b'shvi, that it said that a person is sprinkled with paradrum or water, would apply to all of the tumas from mess that were mentioned in the Mishnah, including the Eretz Amin. So, Now, if you're going to tell me that the problem is of Eretz Amin is that even the airspace itself is Tomei, so even a person goes in there in a box or over a bridge or whatever, has the alumali, then why would he need paradromo? Why would he need paradromo sprinkling? After all, that only applies to Tumas Mes. Here you're talking about that on the face of it, there's no problem with Tumas Mes. There's a reason, because the Chachamim wanted to discourage people from going outside Eretz Yisrael. So why should that require sprinkling? El Olav Mishum Gusha. So doesn't that demonstrate, therefore, that the problem is because of the actual clods of dirt, that those may have mason in them, whether mason marble or whether indiscriminate burials by Goyim or whatever who are there? And therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that's why the person has to be sprinkled with hot adam water. But nevertheless, we're saying since it's only a gzeiro de rabbanon, midaraisi, you don't have to be concerned that any particular clod of dirt has mason in it. Therefore, the nazir doesn't shave, etc. So, okay. Um, So the Gemara continues. Loi, not necessarily is that a valid counterproof. La'olam ein malach mishum avira. In fact, you could say that the Mishnah is telling you that the person is tamei because of the airspace. The Chachamim wanted to discourage people, in particular Koyanim, from leaving out Israel. L'chikatani asha'ara. You know what? When the Mishnah mentions about being sprinkled with paradrum water, it refers to the other tumas that it mentioned in the Mishnah. So in other words, again, you had a bunch of tumas mentioned in the Mishnah, schochos, prois, beis hapras, etc., etc. So you could say when it says that al-e'a'umaz v'shlishi v'shvi is not referring to every single thing in the Mishnah, it's referring to some of them. So it's not necessarily referring to Eretz Amim. Maybe a person goes into Eretz Amim. In fact, they don't need to be sprinkled with paradrum water. And the Gemara says, Hochi Nami Mistabra. In fact, it's logical to understand that way, that the Mishnah is not necessarily meant saying that all of the tumas that have to do with a mess in our Mishnah require Hazar. Now, obviously, the ones with a Mitzvah don't, but the Gemara is not bothering with those, because there it's fairly obvious. Nobody would think that those have to do with Hazar. But even within the tumas mess, we can say there's at least one other one that does not require Hazar. Namely, Mitzkotoni V'Kelem Anogim Mess. Because the Mishnah also mentioned kalim that touch a mess. Now you have to ask, Hani kalim bnei hazor? Now, Hani kalim bnei hazor? Are these kalim the kinds of things that would require a person to be sprinkled with paradrum water? We're not necessarily talking about metal kalim. We're talking about kalim that are called in halacha clay shetef, kalim that can be toivled. For example, wooden kalim. So they're only an avatuma. They're not an aviavosatuma. If a person touches them, he only becomes tomei tumas erev. He only needs to go to the mikveh and have head of shemesh. Obviously, there's no sprinkle in the paradum of water from it. Ela shmamina. So doesn't that prove asha'ara? That again, you can say that the list in the Mishnah, when it says maza b'shlishi v'shvi, doesn't refer to every single thing in the Mishnah, only some of them. So here's where you have the whole discussion about, in fact, what kinds of kalim. We said before, cherev harei ukecholo, the concept that kalim that touch a mess are considered like the mess. To what kind of kalim are we talking about? So Tosfos first starts saying, Rabbi Natan says that if necessarily the Gemara is assuming we can't be talking about metal kalim precisely because, in fact, Tosfos brings from Rabbi Natan, metal kalim, we're definitely cherev harei kacholol applies to those. Everybody agrees to that. They would even be kacholol to the extent where they would actually be metame ba'oyah. And not only ba'oyhol, but they'd even be matame, whether a person touches them or is under an oil for them. So now Tosfos brings that Rabbeinu Chaim Koyen, one of the Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam, who himself, obviously, you can tell by his name, was a Koyen. So he said to Rabbeinu Tam, that creates a problem for me and for other Koyenim like me. And he quotes the pasuk, Ezeb Bayis Asher Tivnali. What kind of house would you build for me? In other words, the context of the pasuk obviously means something else entirely. Hashem is saying no house can contain me. But Rabbeinu Chaim Koyen says, Rabbeinu Tam, if you're going to tell me that Cherev Harei Ukecholo means that any keli, that any metal keli that became tome tumas mes is metame a person, even v'oihel, then there's almost no house that a koyin would be able to ever go into or to live in. Because if you're telling me, Rabbi Natan, that any metal keli, we would say cherev harei ukecholo, to the extent where even a nozget would have to shave because of that, and because of that, Rabbi Natan says necessarily, therefore, all Gemara knows that it has to be talking about wooden kelim. Well, then, in that case, any house is going to have nails in it, and the nails at one point were in an oil a mess. Either the carpenter who built them at one point may have had a mess in his house, or at some point a mess may have died in this house or whatever, and forever after it's going to be tomei. So are you going to tell me then that a koyan can't live in almost any house? So he goes on to bring another proof as well that not. So therefore, Tosfos says that no. So when we say cherev harei ukecholo, we don't mean to the extent that it would actually be metame ba'oihel. All it means is, in other words, so you actually have a number of different opinions among the Rishonim about all of this, about this whole cherev harei ukecholo business. If we say, so first of all, you have the opinion, we said before, you have the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont, who says that it applies even to wooden kalim. So according to him, you'd have to understand our Gemara even further. How could you have our Gemara then, which is saying that if a person touches kalim, I know him a mess, that he's not tamei for 7 days, according to Rabbi Yitzchak Misimpont, he should be, because according to him, Cherev Harei Kacholol would apply even to that. But Tosfos themselves goes on to discuss that different possibilities that in fact even if we say cherev harayu kacholol, it doesn't mean to go so far as that a nozer would shave for it. Therefore, our Gemara does not have to be referring only to wooden kalim; it could be referring even to metal kalim. And we would still say that even though a metal kalim is considered a viavoy satuma, it does make a person tame. It does make him have to be sprinkled with parah adam water, etc., but not to the extent where a nozer will have to shave for it. And then there are different other opinions among Rishonim, including the idea that for example, that Ramban holds that even we are talking about metal kalim, fine, but it's only the time of mago masa, it's not the time of oihel at all. And the Rambam says even more. The Rambam says that it's not even the time of the masa, it's only the time of the maga. And then you have different other possibilities. Gilui Nashas brings over here something from the Baal Amor, who says that even though a person touches the sword or whatever keli, he's going to become tamei, but he doesn't end up needing hazah. He is tamei for 7 days, but he doesn't require hazah. It's a unique shita of the Baal Amor. And there's many different other opinions among the Rishonim about the ins and outs of that. And that's also negeya, therefore, as far as a koyin, what kinds of tumah is a koyin allowed and not allowed. It would mean, in other words, then that it would mean, for example, sort of in Chaim Cohen's point about nails in a house, for example, according to most Rishonim, wouldn't be an issue because, in fact, even though they are metame, if you touch them, they're not necessarily metame if you're under an oil with them. So the Gemara says that, so we can say that you see that there are things in the Mishnah, kalim on no given mess, where in fact, for whatever reason, no hazar is necessary, whether we're talking about wooden kalim, whether we're talking even about metal kalim, and those don't require. So you see that not every single thing mentioned in the Mishnah requires hazar. Therefore, you can just as well say, as far as the Eretz Amim, that maybe it doesn't require hazar either, but you could in fact say that nevertheless, but you could say that the Tumah of Eretz Amim is based on Avir, is based on being in the airspace of it rather than just because of touching the dirt of it. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with analyzing this point further about what the nature of the Tumah of Eretz Amim is, and we're going to talk about this business of Oihel Zoruk and how it's relevant as far as Koyanim flying in planes. Best Hashem.
When you travel from Eretz Amim to Eretz Israel, do you bring this Tumah with you?
Well, you yourself remain Tommy until you get sprinkled. But no, the Tumah doesn't come with you in the sense you're not Matame Eretz Yisrael. A person can be Matame Kalim to a certain extent. If the person is an Ava Tumah, then he can be Matame Kalim that he touches, but he's not going to be Matame the dirt, the ground that he walks on.
So if he brings Eretz Amim into Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't Matame Eretz Yisrael?
So if he brings dirt from Eretz Amim in, then that's what we said before. Tosfos mentioned that if he brings in dirt from Eretz Amim, that dirt will become Tomei. That dirt will be Tomei, and anything it touches will become Tomei, but not by Tumas Oil. Actually, the Mishnah in Aulis mentions you need a minimum amount of dirt for that to be an issue. You need Kechoisem Amar Sufin. You need the amount of dirt that would be needed to seal that they used in those times as a seal or a stamp on certain kinds of packages. Less than that, then the Chachamim won't go to Tumah on it. But yeah, other than that, you're not going to get time with the rest of Eretz Yisrael by that.
Basically, okay. Those days when you traveled, and then so you had to be sprayed on when you came from Kutzlars into Eretz Yisrael. You had to be sprayed.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Well, that's what we're asking actually. So far, that's what we're asking. if the nature of the Tumma of Eretz Amin is only because of the Aver, then you don't necessarily have to be sprinkled, because then the Tumma was only because Chachamim wanted to discourage Kohenim and, to a certain extent, other people from leaving Eretz Yisrael. But in that case, they never made it that it's actually a form of Tumas Nes. But if they say it's Mishum Gusha, if you say it's because of the Jurus, then it is a form of Tumas Nes, because you're concerned that may say Mabul or random Goyim, random Jews or whatever, are buried in this dirt. Yeah.
And he definitely walked on earth.
Yeah, that would assume only if you walked on the earth, exactly. If according to that, according to that possibility, if you were to go in there in a, if you were to go in there in a box or walking over a bridge or something, then you wouldn't necessarily be talking. Yeah, that's so. We're going to continue that point tomorrow. That's the thing.
So according to that logic, a Kohen should never be allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael.
Well, again, you know, back when we had to be careful with Tumah Matara, maybe not. Nowadays, there's less of an issue with that, because even the Koyim are Becheskas Tmei Mesim, and so not necessarily does the Gzeira of going to Eretz Amim apply to them.
But it will when we
when Mashiach comes, that's different. But when Mashiach comes, that's Rosh Hashanah Avim and Aretz anyhow, so, yeah.
Shkoyach.
Good luck.